Critique of the Gotha Program by Karl Marx. Section. Engels' letter to August Bebel in Zwickau. London, March 18th to 28th, 1875. Dear Bebel, I have received your letter of February the 23rd, and I'm glad to hear that you are in such good bodily health. You ask me what we think of the unification affair. We are, unfortunately, in exactly the same boat as yourself. Neither Leibknecht nor anyone else have let us have any kind of information, and hence we too know only what is in the papers. Not that there was anything in them until a week or so ago, when the draft program appeared. That astonished us not a little, I must say. Our party had so often held out a conciliatory hand to the Lasallians, or at least proffered cooperation, only to be rebuffed so often and so contemptuously by the Hasenclavers, Hasselmans, and Tulks, as to lead any child to the conclusion that, should these gentlemen now come and themselves proffer conciliation, they must be in a hell of a dilemma. Knowing full well what these people are like, however, it behooves us to make the most of that dilemma and insist on every conceivable guarantee that might prevent these people from restoring, at our party's expense, their shattered reputation in general working-class opinion. They should be given an exceedingly cool and cautious reception, and union be made dependent on the degree of their readiness to abandon their sectarian slogans and their state aid, and to accept in its essentials the Eisenach program of 1869, or an improved edition of it adapted to the present day. Our party has absolutely nothing to learn from the Lasallians in the theoretical sphere, i.e., the crux of the matter where the program is concerned. But the Lasallians doubtless have something to learn from the party. The first prerequisite for union was that they cease to be sectarians, Lasallians, i.e., that, first and foremost, they should, if not wholly relinquish the universal panacea of state aid, at least admit it to be a secondary provisional measure, alongside and amongst many others recognized as possible. The draft program shows that our people, while infinitely superior to the Lasallian leaders in matters of theory, are far from being a match for them where political guile is concerned. Once again, the, quote, honest men have been cruelly done in the eye by the dishonest. To begin with, they adopt the high-sounding but historically false Lasallian dictum. In relation to the working class, all other classes are only one reactionary mass. This proposition is true only in certain exceptional instances, for example, in the case of a revolution by the proletariat, e.g. the commune, or in a country in which not only has the bourgeoisie constructed state and society after its own image, but the democratic petty bourgeoisie, in its wake, has already carried that reconstruction to its logical conclusion. If, for instance, in Germany, the democratic petty bourgeoisie were part of this reactionary mass, then how would the Social Democratic Workers' Party have gone hand in hand with it, the People's Party, for years on end? How could the Volksstaat derive virtually all its political content from the petty bourgeois democratic Frankfurter Zeitung? And how can one explain the adoption in this same program of no less than 7 demands that coincide exactly and word for word with the program of the People's Party and of petty bourgeois democracy? I mean the 7 political demands, 1 to 5 and 1 to 2, of which there is not one that is not bourgeois democratic. Secondly, the principle that the workers' movement is an international one is, to all intents and purposes, utterly denied in respect of the present, and this by men who, for the space of 5 years, and under the most difficult conditions, upheld that principle in the most laudable manner. The German workers' position in the van of the European movement rests essentially on their genuinely international attitude during the war. No other proletariat would have behaved so well. And now this principle is to be denied by them at a moment when, everywhere abroad, workers are stressing it all the more by reason of the efforts made by governments to suppress every attempt at its practical application in an organization. And what is left of the internationalism of the workers' movement? The dim prospect, not even of subsequent cooperation among European workers with a view to their liberation. Nay, but a future, quote, international brotherhood of peoples, of your peace league bourgeois United States of Europe. There was, of course, no need whatever to mention the international as such. But at the very least, there should have been no going back on the program of 1869, and some sort of statement to the effect that, though first of all, the German Workers' Party is acting within the limits set by its political frontiers, quote, it has no right to speak in the name of the European proletariat, especially when it says what it says is wrong. It is nevertheless conscious of its solidarity with the workers of all other countries, and will, as before, always be ready to meet the obligations that solidarity entails. Such obligations, even if one does not definitely proclaim or regard oneself as part of the international, consist, for example, in aid, abstention from blacklegging during strikes, making sure that the party organs keep German workers informed of the movement abroad, agitation against impending or incipient dynastic wars, and during such wars, an attitude such as was exemplarily maintained in 1870 and 1871, etc. Thirdly, our people have allowed themselves to be saddled with the Lassallian, quote, iron law of wages, which is based on a completely outmoded economic view, namely, that on average, the workers receive only the minimum wage because, according to the Malthusian theory of population, there are always too many workers. Such was LaSalle's reasoning. Now, in Capital, Marx has amply demonstrated that the laws governing wages are very complex, that, according to circumstances, now this law, now that, holds sway, that they are therefore by no means iron, but are, on the contrary, elastic, and that the subject really cannot be dismissed in a few words, as LaSalle imagined. Marx's argument, upon which the law LaSalle derived from him and Ricardo, whom he misinterpreted, is based, as that argument appears, for example, on page 5 of the Arbeiterlesebuch, where it is quoted from another pamphlet of LaSalle's, is exhaustively refuted by Marx in the section on accumulation of capital. Thus, by adopting the LaSallian iron law, one commits oneself to a false proposition and false reasoning in support of the same. Fourthly, as its one and only social demand, the program puts forward LaSallian state aid in starkest form, as stolen by LaSalle from Bukes. And this, After Brack has so ably demonstrated the sheer futility of that demand, after almost all, if not all, of our party speakers have, in their struggle against the Lasallians, been compelled to make a stand against this state aid, our party could hardly demean itself further. Internationalism sunk to the level of Armand Gig, socialism to that of the bourgeois Republican Buez, who confronted the socialists with this demand in order to supplant them. But state aid, in the Lasallian sense of the word, is, after all, at most only one measure among many others for the attainment of an end here lamely described as, quote, paving the way for the solution of the social question. As though in our case there were still a social question that remained unsolved in theory. Thus, if you were to say, the German Workers' Party strives to abolish wage labor, and hence class distinctions, by introducing cooperative production to industry and agriculture and on a national scale, it is in favor of any measure calculated to attain that end. Then no Lasallian could possibly object. Fifthly, there is absolutely no mention of the organization of the working class as a class through the medium of trade unions. And that is a point of the utmost importance. This being the proletariat's true class organization, in which it fights its daily battles with capital, in which it trains itself, and which nowadays can no longer simply be smashed, even with reaction at its worst, as presently in Paris. Considering the importance this organization is likewise assuming in Germany, it would, in our view, be indispensable to accord it some mention in the program, and, possibly, to leave some room for it in the organization of the party. All these things have been done by our people to oblige the Lasallians. And what have the others conceded? That a host of somewhat muddled and purely democratic demands should figure in the program. Some of them being of a purely fashionable nature, for instance, quote, legislation by the people, such as exists in Switzerland and does more harm than good, if it can be said to do anything at all, quote, administration by the people, that would be at least something. Similarly omitted is the first prerequisite of all liberty, that all officials be responsible for all their official actions to every citizen, before the ordinary courts and in accordance with common law. That demands, such as freedom of science and freedom of conscience figure in every liberal bourgeois program, and seem a trifle out of place here, is something I shall not enlarge upon. The free people's state is transformed into the free state. Grammatically speaking, a free state is one in which the state is free vis-a-vis its citizens, a state, that is, with a despotic government. All of the palaver about the state ought to be dropped, especially after the commune, which had ceased to be a state in the true sense of the term. The, quote, people state has been flung in our teeth ad nauseum by the anarchists, although Marx's anti-Proudhon piece, and after it the Communist Manifesto, declare outright that, with the introduction of the socialist order in society, the state will dissolve of itself and disappear. Now, since the state is merely a transitional institution, of which use is made in the struggle, in the revolution, to keep down one's enemies by force, it is utter nonsense to speak of a free people state, so long as the proletariat still makes use of the state. It makes use of it, not for the purpose of freedom, but of keeping down its enemies. And as soon as there can be any question of freedom, the state as such ceases to exist. We would therefore suggest that Gemeinwesen, commonality, be universally substituted for state. It is a good old German word that can very well do service for the French commune. Quote, "The elimination of all social and political inequality, rather than, quote, the abolition of all class distinctions, is similarly a most dubious expression. As between one country, one province, and even one place in another, living conditions will always evince a certain inequality, which may be reduced to a minimum, but never wholly eliminated. The living conditions of alpine dwellers will always be different from those of the plainsmen. The concept of a socialist society as a realm of equality is a one-sided French concept deriving from the old liberty, equality, fraternity, a concept which was justified in that, in its own time and place, it signified a phase of development, but which, like all the one-sided ideas of earlier socialist schools, ought now to be superseded, since they produce nothing but mental confusion, and more accurate ways of presenting the matter have been discovered. I shall desist, although almost every word in this program, a program which is, moreover, insipidly written, lays itself open to criticism. It is such that, should it be adopted, Marx and I could never recognize a new party set up on that basis, and shall have to consider most seriously what attitude, public as well as private, we should adopt towards it. Remember, abroad, we are held responsible for any and every statement and action of the German Social Democratic Workers' Party, e.g. by Bakunin in his work Statehood and Anarchy, in which we are made to answer for every injudicious word spoken or written by Leibknecht since the inception of the Demokratisches Wochenblatt. People imagine that we run the whole show from here, whereas you know, as well as I do, that we have hardly ever interfered in the least with internal party affairs, and then only in an attempt to make good, as far as possible, what we considered to have been blunders, and only theoretical blunders at that. But, as you yourself will realize, this program marks a turning point which may very well force us to renounce any kind of responsibility in regard to the party that adopts it. Generally speaking, less importance attaches itself to the official program of a party than to what it does. But a new program is, after all, a banner planted in the public, and the outside world judges the party by it. Hence, whatever happens, there should be no going back, as there is here, on the Eisenach program. It should further be considered what the workers of other countries will think of this program. What impression will be created by this genuflection on the part of the entire German socialist proletariat before Lassallianism? I am, moreover, convinced that a union on this basis would not last a year. Are the best minds of our party to descend to repeating parrot fashion, Lassallian maxims concerning the iron law of wages and state aid? I'd like to see you, for one, thus employed. And were they to do so, their audiences would hiss them off the stage. And I feel sure that it is precisely on these bits of the program that the Lasallians are insisting, like Shylock the Jew on his pound of flesh. The split will come, but we shall have, quote, made honest men, again, of Hasselman, Hassan Clever, and Tolkien Company. We shall emerge from the split weaker, and the Lasallians stronger. Our party will have lost its political virginity, and will never again be able to come out wholeheartedly against the Lasallian maxims, which for a time it inscribed on its own banner. And then, should the Lasallians again declare themselves to be the sole and most genuine workers' party, and our people to be bourgeois, the program would be there to prove it. All the socialist measures in it are theirs, and our party has introduced nothing save the demands of that petty bourgeois democracy, which it has itself described in the same program as part of the, quote, reactionary mass. I had held this letter back in view of the fact that you would only be released on April the 1st, in honor of Bismarck's birthday, not wanting to expose it to the risk of interception in the course of an attempt to smuggle it in. Well, I have just had a letter from Brack, who has also felt grave doubts about the program and asks for our opinion. I shall therefore send this letter to him for forwarding, so that he can read it without my having to write the whole thing over again. I have, by the way, also spoken my mind to Ram, to Liebknecht. I wrote but briefly. I cannot forgive his not having told us a single word about the whole business, whereas Ram and the others believed he had given us exact information, until it was, in a manner of speaking, too late. True, this has always been his wont. Hence the large amount of disagreeable correspondence which we, both Marx and myself, have had with him. But this time it is really too bad, and we definitely shan't act in concert with him. Do see that you manage to come here in the summer. You would, of course, stay with me and, if the weather is fine, we might spend a day or two taking sea baths, which would really do you good after your long spell in jail. Ever your friend, F.E. Frederick Engels. P.S. Marx has just moved house. He is living at 41 Maitland Park, Crescent, Northwest London. Induction.